This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning here with Koo Soo Chuang, taking you to 10 a.m. It is now 6 a.m. in the morning, Wednesday the 22nd of July. And for all the Sarawakians out there, happy Sarawak Day.
Woo! Well done, guys. Congratulations for making it this far.
Well, some fun facts. Sarawak is, the land size of it is like the equivalent of Peninsula Malaysia. It is that big, right? It only has a population of slightly more than 2 million people. And of course, it joined Malaysia on the 16th of September in 1963. So we wish all Sarawakians who are listening in, whether here or, you know, through our app in Kuching or wherever they are, happy Sarawak Day.
Happy Sarawak Day, Sarawakians. Well done.
The best thing about Sarawak for me is the laksa. Sorry,
the food,
I love it.
Oh my God, the food. Alexis makes a really good one.
Yeah, but nothing beats what you can get
That's
in Kuching,
right.
Okay?
No? Okay. No. Yeah, yeah. No, but you got to fly there. Like,
yeah,
you got to
fly there. But fortunately, now we can, right? Because domestic tourism has started again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Would you fly there? No. Actually, I wouldn't fly.
I have some hesitations about getting on a plane, but this weekend, I am leaving Kuala Lumpur after months.
You're kidding. Where are you going to go?
I'm going to the East Coast.
No way.
Yes,
I am.
Where
on the East Coast?
Chirating.
Nice. Where are you going to stay? Is it one of those weekends? You know, are you with... companion
with,
you
with
know?
Family.
Oh, with family.
Yeah.
Okay, la. Vanilla.
But I'm kind of, you know, a little bit curious what's it going to be like. But this is the amazing part. Okay, the hotels are all full.
Yeah, that's true.
They called me to double confirm that the rooms that I still want the rooms.
Tell you,
so it tells you how much that we had cabin fever. Everybody is just, you know, trying to get out of town.
Yeah, that's true. Did they? Yeah. Well, so avoid the crowds, lah, Wong, you know.
No, where I am is in the middle of kind of nowhere, which is exactly where I want to be, you know, in the middle of nowhere with the beach in front of me.
Nice.
And hopefully it doesn't rain too much. Because it's been pouring buckets in KL.
Yeah, hey, there's floods, huh? Parts of the country.
And this is something we're going to be talking about at 7:15 this morning. And last night was an incredible storm also.
It was at about 2 o'clock. It started coming down. Cats, dogs and mice.
Yeah.
And
so
it was really good, man. I opened all my windows, I opened all the curtains, enjoyed the tropical downpour, you know. It's really
nice.
But
unfortunately, you know, sometimes these floods come with chaos, which is something we'll be exploring at 7:15 as to why this happens and also the economic cost. But what do you have this morning, Chuang?
I talk about the link between space and money.
Meanwhile, I'll also be talking about money. Would you sacrifice it to find your way in life?
I know my answer.
Tell us what you think. You know, if you want to weigh in our conversations, you can. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after this song. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Funky Jam by Primal Scream. A very cool song. Good morning. I'm Wong Xiaoning here with Koo Soo Chuang, and this is The Morning Run. And, you know, we're going to be talking about what would you give up to find your way in life, right? And this is on the basis of this article in the South China Morning Post, which actually features the son of one of our more prominent billionaires. So we're talking about Ananda Krishnan's son. Of course, Ananda Krishnan of the Maxis, Astro and Bumi Armada fame. So apparently, the man is worth $5 billion, right? So probably what, our top 5 billionaires in Malaysia. And his only son, you know, quite some time ago, wasn't recently, walked away from his fortune to be a Thai Buddhist monk.
Actually, that story is quite old already. It's been the subject of corporate folklore for years already, right? His name in Buddhist circles is called Ajahn Siripanyo. But that, I think most monks who come into the faith are called some kind of Ajahn or another. So I listened to one of the videos that he was in. He sounds very classy, man. He's got this British accent. He sounds very educated. He speaks in clipped English tones. Except that when you look at him in real life, he's got like, you know,
He's normal saffron robes.
He shaved his hair, he's wearing saffron robes, he's got this, you know, this John Lennon glasses on. And he looks like your typical monk. So I guess for people who have come from wealth, who have amassed great fortunes in their life, it's not a given that your children are going to follow you.
Mm.
I think that for people who have made that kind of money, there's been certain sacrifices they've made. You take on certain personal traits and characteristics which might repel your children. You got to be a certain one kind la to become very rich, you know. Even more so if you're a billionaire. And well, I think it has every chance of causing some kind of rift within your family, because there's always a trade-off.
Yeah, I mean, of course, in Malaysia we're surrounded by these Asian families where the children are somewhat expected to continue the family fortune, right? And some have done so very successfully. I mean, names come.
Francis Yeo,
yeah, Francis Yeo is one. The limbs of the Genting family. You know, they've grown
to some extent. Yeah,
they've grown the Genting empire even more. So yes, even smaller non-listed companies like Royal Selangor, the second generation, third generation are continuing with their business, right?
And then in Penang, you've got families that go back 8 generations because their great-great-great, you know, from the 18th century, bought land and all these kinds of things, had jewellery stores and all these things, 8 generations in.
Yeah, but I just wonder, you know, from a perspective of an individual, it must be a lot of pressure, actually. You know, being born in this family and then the expectation that you should continue. And also if you're a parent, do you want to, you know, encourage your children to continue the family fortune, even though maybe it's not their calling? Or do you let the child, you know, go out and do what they want to do in the world today?
I had exactly this discussion with one corporate scion yesterday. We were having breakfast, right? And he was telling me, you know, bro, from outside it looks very nice. Inside it's very tough because there's so many cousins and so many brothers from his parents and his uncles and aunties. They all have a stake in the family business. Now they're trying to divvy up the wealth, and it's very hard because a lot of that money is in assets like land bank and all that. And some of this land is not very commercialable. You know, it's next to petrol stations and in city centres where if you don't sell to the petrol station, there's no one you can sell to. And then there's a question of valuation. So it's very, very messy, very messy. And there's like, oh, now you're the one in charge, you know, then you offer me this price. You know, then you still got to see them
in
Chinese New Year, you know. Yeah. So I give you this exit, but what, you want to call your own auditor and come and see my auditor? And then, you know, messy lah. And I've had this discussion with many, many, many friends who have come from rich families. Nice from far, but far from nice.
But I think even if you're, just say, you know, you're not like super duper rich, okay, you're the average Joe, don't you have expectations also for your own children? Like yourself, Chuang?
No. I want them to go their own way. Unlike most parents, I don't want them to become like me.
You don't want
Which is not a surprise, actually.
You don't want them to get up at 4 a.m. and turn up in some radio station.
Yeah, that too. But
unless they want to.
Yeah, it's a very ego thing to expect your father, your son, or your children to want to be like you. No, I don't think so. I want them to go their own way.
I think all of us have to find our own way.
You have to.
Right?
You have to.
And if it happens to be in line with what your parents want, great. And sometimes if it's not, then it's not, right? Because you have to have some sense of self-fulfillment and achievement in your own little space.
You know, this thing with another Krishnan son, right? And there's also the thing with Tae Hyung Piao's children as well, Pabi Bang. Mm. I've also heard stories that none of his children want to take over the banking empire.
Yeah, they're not in any position
the business
of
at all.
Yeah.
And then there's also the Hong Leong family as well within Malaysia. I think their children
are on the board.
So, but whether they will share the same aspirations, I try to analyze it, right? And sometimes you have to think to yourself, what was he like when he was, you know, when he was younger, trying to push the business? You must have been some kind of one kind, like, you know, because
grit, determination.
Yeah, but there comes a huge sacrifice. Huge sacrifice. You don't spend time with the children. You don't see them at the school concerts. You don't come and pick them up from school. You're 24/7 in the business, working, piling away, making the money. But your children don't want your money. Their children want your time.
I don't mind some of that if they don't want the money, though. But let us know what
you
think.
Well, no, to some extent, lah. Yeah. But there's always a trade-off, right?
Of course. Let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was This Life by Vampire Weekend. Just another 2 more days to go, Chuang, because you're listening to The Morning Run with Shouting and Chuang. And today, I mean, well, at this moment, we're looking at this article from BBC talking about the luxury of space. And I think that became even more apparent during COVID-19 when all of us were in some form of a lockdown or another, right? And basically, we weren't allowed to leave our homes except to work on, you know, and work if provided it was an essential service or to run out and get some groceries. Otherwise, you were pretty much housebound for what, at least that first month, I remember?
Yeah, so the worst case would have been if you are stuck in some low-cost flat in a very small apartment with your entire family and your grandparents maybe and young children, you know, wailing their voices out. Six to a units, you know, it would have driven you crazy, lah. So, what the story does is it basically draws the link between wealth and space. And you can say it's true because, like, for example, if you have money, you buy a bungalow, right? And typically, the defining metric of a bungalow is how much land you have, right? Mm. So the more money you have, the more land you can buy, and then obviously the more privacy you get, right? So in a pandemic situation where you've got to be locked down, it's nice. You've got your own house, you've got your own space, and you see Instagram and YouTube full of these videos about
celebs.
People. Yeah, you know, sitting on their lawn, playing the violin, answering phone calls. Oh, I'm enjoying my lockdown. Spare a thought for the poor folk. So if you don't have money, you're going to be stuck in a low-class flat. It's a big issue because socially there's problems because it's a direct link between space and your mental health.
Yeah, I mean, everybody needs a bit of breathing room, yeah. Right? So like you say, like imagine if like there's 8 of y'all, 10 of y'all in 700 square feet. That's not something that, you know, you really enjoy. But that's how people like in Hong Kong, so, you know, to them, that's the norm, right? Or even in Tokyo, they live in incredibly
Correct.
Small spaces.
But then you add the layer of the fact that you might lose your job. You got no money to pay your bills. Your kids need food. They're not in school. They're getting further behind their peers. And then it gets very stressful.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it adds to the mental health issue.
Yeah, so what this BBC story did, they analysed, like, for example, countries like Canada and the UK, right? In the UK, black people are 4 times less likely than white people in urban, concentrated, low-cost housing areas, you know, the estates, right, to have access to green space. Not just house, but land within your house, you know. This is just like
parks,
walking
right?
distance to
yeah.
a park. They don't have these things. And then you ask yourself, why is it that crime is higher, you know, education levels are lower, there's more social strife? You don't give them the conditions to thrive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then you compare, say, Vancouver. Vancouver, 95% of the people within Vancouver are 5 minutes away from a green space, like a park. And then you ask yourself, why is it that Vancouver has less social strife? This is the reason.
So people have outlets.
Yes, you can go there and exercise. You can go and, you know, breathe in the oxygen. You can get some me time. It's a big deal.
But it's also a function of all this, you know, the interrelation between the relationship between the, let's say, the state council or, you know, or let's say the city council that runs that area versus the wealth of the place, the density of the place, right? So yeah, Vancouver is really nice. I've been there. It's picture perfect.
They've changed the name already. They call it Hongkoover now.
Okay.
I mean, if you all the people from Hong Kong coming to stay there.
That's why they want to move there, right? Because there's so much yeah. space.
I mean, yeah, they've taken all their money there and settled down.
And that's also one reason why the real estate there in Canada is one of the highest, the most
yeah,
expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a beautiful place. I mean, it's really charming. Unless you go in winter.
Have you been? Yeah,
yes,
it's
I have
gorgeous,
been.
Right?
Yeah, unless it's freezing when in winter. But because the state itself is so wealthy, it can afford to fund all these, you know, public places, parks. And it's also down to urban planning. Right.
Responsible government, yeah. which is clean and not corrupt. I think that's one of the key things as well. Canada, like Malaysia, has a lot of natural resources, right? It's just that they've done better in terms of keeping their money to themselves and not spending it on cronies.
Well, or maybe they've just been very careful in terms of their urban development, right? They don't allow overbuilding, for example. So if we bring it back home to Malaysia, I think what was apparent was that, you know, people really miss the public spaces like the Kiara Parks, for example. And, you know.
Yeah. And the Kiara Park, there's a whole huge NGO trying to stave the park from the greedy developers who, I'm not going to say who was the developer.
It's still ongoing in the courts.
It's still ongoing. And Taman Tun as well. They want to take that green lung, turn it into the condos and make billions, right? For what?
Yeah, so incredibly, you know, if anything, COVID-19 reminds us that these green spaces become even more
important.
And, you know, we really missed it. I really missed my runs outside because, you know, that's one of the things I do every weekend. And for me, I hope that COVID-19 reminds governments that we still need to keep that green space. Because even if we do...
You think they'll care?
Well, we pray
this
because, you know...
Or any other government?
Well, it's the balance, right, between development and keeping, you know, our kind of recreational areas.
I think it's very important because there's this huge focus on the B40 now and underprivileged, the gap between the have-nots and the haves. This is an example of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because green spaces should be free.
Yeah.
And this is F-R-E-E-N for all, right? and, you know, at least have an outlet for some people. So let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Rockaway Beach by the Ramones. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Shaoning here with Khoo Soo Chuang, and of course, this is The Morning Run, and that was Dreams by Fleetwood Mac. We're now taking a look at what's happening around the world, and I think we're going to set our sights on the EU, because yesterday, after a four-day-long summit, the EU leaders have reached a deal on its coronavirus recovery fund worth 750 billion euros, and it was the second longest summit in the bloc's history. So this is the first time the European Commission will borrow on the capital markets as a bloc, because prior to this, they had never, ever done so. And I think it's all due to COVID-19.
Yeah, I mean, Charles Michel called the accord a pivotal moment for Europe. Apparently, it's been 70 years they've been trying to, they've been together, right? And so what this does, and markets rallied on this news, futures rallied on this news, the risk index dropped, basically. This allows all 27 states within the EU to raise this money on, guess what, capital markets. So we're gonna have a Nasdaq moment on this news as well.
Well, I mean, we do know when we look at Europe, the responses have been very different, right? So you have the countries down south, so the likes of Italy, Portugal, Spain, you know, crying out for this versus the what they call the frugal four, which is Sweden, Denmark, Austria, and Netherlands.
The frugal four,
rejecting. Rejecting it, right? Because they say, oh no, you know, we don't want to issue these bonds together. This is your problem. You deal with it, right? Are you going to be fiduciarily responsible? Because prior to this, you didn't adhere to whatever we told you to do, and you spent, you know, without consideration, and your GDP is so weak, you know, blah, blah, blah. Is it a bailout? We don't want to participate in this bailout.
The European Union is like a family of 27 siblings, right?
Yeah.
Some will be...
Who all don't get along sometimes.
Who don't get along. Some will be hardworking and, you know, they make some money, but they don't spend it. Then there'll be some who don't study hard and then can't do well in school and then come out and then don't get a high salary, but then like to gamble, you know, this kind of thing. like for example, Italy, you know, for example.
Well, this is the country that had an average, 0.6% GDP for the last 25 years. Doing so well.
No, I don't think so.
And then facing some, real structural issues.
Then there's some that like to spend money, you know, don't like to spend for the future long term, like Spain, for example, you know.
But then they don't have a choice because COVID-19 has affected all of them. So,
yeah,
you know, a
so
family has to
come
get together.
Yes.
Yeah. And finally they did. But there was a lot of trading going on, a lot of negotiation. So, kudos to them getting the deal done. But if we look stateside, the other hot news, of course, is Joe Biden, because he has said or suggested that there are four black women in his list of potential VPs. And I just want to remind everybody, apparently there's only 104 or 105 days left to the next US presidential elections, because August is coming around soon already. Their elections is in November. You know, and he hasn't announced one. He hasn't announced his VP, which is critical, actually, because the way the US political system is set up, if anything were to happen to him, the VP actually takes over.
Yeah, so I think CNN has previously reported that Senator Kamala Harris of California, then this Republican Val Demings of Florida, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, and then former Obama administration NSA advisor Susan Rice, then there's also Karen Bass of California, among the black women being considered. It's no surprise because the minority population in America is huge. To some extent,
well, outnumber.
At least, yes,
I think
exactly.
In about 10 years.
So all white people are no longer the electoral force they used to be. And I think quite rightly so, diversity and especially gender diversity should be one of the prime considerations. I hope he chooses a younger person, though, because he's not of a very junior vintage himself, is he?
No. But the fun fact, Hillary Clinton actually announced her VP today, 4 years ago.
Mm.
So maybe he doesn't want to announce it today too. Not a good omen, right?
No.
but I think everybody be watching as to who could potentially be his VP. I'm really curious because when was the last time, have we ever had a woman VP in the White House?
That's a good question, actually.
I can't think of one.
True also.
So something different. I mean, we almost had a woman president 4 years ago, almost being
almost,
the word.
Yeah.
Then we had Trump. dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. It was all south from there, wasn't it?
Well, you know, watch this space. So let us know what you think about any of these stories or anything that we discussed this morning. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Shaoning here with Khoo Swee Chong, and this is The Morning Run, and that was Darling by Real Estate. And before we take a look at the papers this morning, I'm going to mention a little tweet that came in, which I thought was quite funny. And this was in relation to the story about, you know, the South China Morning Post article on Ananda Krishnan's son. And Faris actually tweeted in and said, give me the billions first.
I think the whole world will be echoing that statement because I don't mind billions. All. Even if it's in Hong Kong dollars, I don't mind.
Rupiah. I mean, any money is good money, right?
Yeah.
But in the meantime, if you look at the papers this morning, I have the Malaysian Reserve in front of me and it's about the moratorium again. I think there are, you know, question marks whether it will be extended, although the headline says, moratorium extension unlikely, but banks pledge help on repayments. You know, because the banks, obviously, they don't want the moratorium. It'll be too painful to their bottom lines. But asking people, you know, go and see your bank and appeal on a case-by-case basis, which is true. If you think you're going to have cash flow issues, at least seek the bank's help rather than, you know, before it becomes a problem. I think that's more important.
Yeah, I mean, the Star page 11 on Nation talking about the same thing. So Tengku Zafrul, the finance minister, said there's been no final decision yet. They're still in discussions about whether this should happen or not. And of course, he was responding to a question in Parliament about this issue. I think it's very much in the fray now because a lot of groups like the FMM and even the former Prime Minister Najib has been also...
And I think the Chinese Chamber of Commerce.
I mean, I was talking to somebody yesterday, the same guy I was having breakfast with, and he basically pointed out that this loan moratorium is a bit like a stimulus measure, right? Because the discretionary, the money that you don't spend in your loans has gone into the system. It's gone into things like
electronic
products.
It was designed to do that.
Yes. So you then retract it like it is, like I think the end of July is the same thing with the stimulus checks in America. The whole economy will come to a grinding halt again. So I think this, banks aside and bottom lines aside, I think the finance ministry has got to think about these things.
Yeah, but you can't just, you know, continue kicking the can down the road, right?
You can't
just extend loan moratoriums indefinitely. It doesn't work that way. The idea of it was to give people some breathing space. So now the question is that breathing space enough? And you were trying very hard to prevent unemployment, right? Which we know now is 5.3%.
Yeah.
So I think that balance has to be found whether, you know, the reality is that there will be jobs lost. But at what point does it get too painful for the economy?
Yeah.
And then, you know, then brings back the question, of course, you know, moratoriums, they do help prevent unemployment, but also at some economic cost, right? Because you can't also allow companies that perhaps aren't doing well to continue forever indefinitely,
no,
creating
you don't want any
zombie companies.
But there are a lot of zombie companies in Malaysia, as we know. Swiftly moving on to page 10 of the Star, and very closely related to the loan moratorium issue, the Star is saying that, citing a well-informed source, as opposed to an unwell-informed source,
which shouldn't be a source,
that PN is preparing for a snap election. Okay, so... they are saying that they are finalizing a seat allocation framework to meet the target of one-to-one contest with the opposition. They won't contest with each other within the same, for example, constituency, but it's not yet decided whether they will have a common logo or use that of their parties. And we know that right now, PN holds 113 of the 222 seats in the Dewan Rakyat, just a very slim majority of, I think, essentially two. Basically. Also in the Star business, there's more calls and very closely related to the pandemic fallout, calls for cuts in corporate taxes to, I think, 20%, I think from the 24-odd in Malaysia, making us, I guess, much more competitive with the Indonesians and Indians of this world, Thailands of this world. And this makes sense because it's also kind of like a stimulatory measure for companies, which then gives them more room to spend on maintaining jobs, for example.
Yeah. And then page 2 of the Reserve has an article with our DG, Dr. Noor Hisham, saying that the rise of COVID-19 cases is worrying. because now there are 19 active clusters. Wow. So there's been a big jump, you know.
Wow, from 4 yesterday, right?
Yeah. And I mean, we see this also like in Hong Kong where the cases suddenly jump again. So I think the point is basically everybody has to be like mindful, right? You wear the mask, wash your hands, practice social distancing. Life hasn't returned back to normal. And I see people just behaving as if like there was no COVID-19.
Well, history is very instructive because the Spanish flu in 1905, the second wave was much more lethal and much more mortality-ridden than the first wave. So it's not over. No. Just one more thing. Page 3 of the Star saying that the government is considering jail time if you don't mask up. So I think that's a decision that they are still considering.
Yeah, that's all from the papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Jack Kuzi, Director for Strategy at VFS Group. But first, here's Do You Realize by the Flaming Lips. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.